The Education Committee meeting will come to order. February 23rd.
Me too.
12. Washington's birthday. So, we have, our focus today is on some of the efforts to enhance and strengthen our career and technical education, which has kind of experienced some demise among our public schools. And that is what the focus of today's agenda is. And we're going to begin with Senator Stumpf. This is a bill that we had before us last year, and some provisions of it did get into law, but there are some others that need some further attention. And so Senator Stumpf is back before us with Senate File 451. Another reminder before we begin that this room needs to have iPads and cell phones turned off because they interfere with our sound system. So anything that's of the cellular nature does create a problem. So thank you for that accommodation while we're meeting. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. If I could have someone just hand these out, I'd like to... This is just actually a proclamation from the governor's office, and I think it's appropriate that we have a discussion relating to career and technical vocation programs. And the proclamation this week is actually declared to be Career and Technical Education Month. I should say not the week, but the month. So you can look that over. And career and technical education is a very important part of our education system. And as Madam Chair, as you mentioned, last year we had a provision or a couple provisions that we tried to address and actually did address, and they were part of the original education bill that was passed. And as you know, we had the governor veto the first original bill, and then, of course, went into a special session. And in that process, some of the provisions that we had originally passed were not included. And one of the provisions related to the career and technical education or career and technical levy. And that's part of this proposal. And the other provision related to, and I believe could classify it as a misinterpretation of what we really intended to do. And so I would like to do is maybe have Mr. Schoenfeld to kind of fill in the picture a little bit, and then I do have an amendment that I would like to have handed out.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf, Madam Chair. I did work on this last year on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. That's the group that I work on behalf of. And when the legislation initially left this committee, what the legislation stated was that there would be a physics, chemistry, or a CTE course that would fulfill the requirements. But when it got into the conference committee, what ended up was to say that met the underlying standards of either physics or chemistry. That was a little different, at least, than from what my intent had been, and It was a further tightening of what had passed out of this committee. In that case, what we were really trying to do was to give students more options. And to continue that any CTE course that would fill in that gap would be a science-based CTE course. But for instance, those of us that are involved in agriculture, one of the things that is a primary subject area is biology. There may be students that have got to take a standard biology class as one of the requirements in high school, and then they may be very well suited to take an advanced class that has biology in it. Or it could be in the case of health sciences, or in the case of many other career and tech type courses that might make a combination of chemistry, physics, and biology, all to meet the scientific standards that are embedded in our standards and benchmarks, but not necessarily to be a replacement for physics or chemistry, as an example, not to be put in the position of replacing the chemistry or science teacher, or a physics teacher, but instead courses that would be involved in many different areas. This is something that we've tried several times to amend statutorily. We have, for instance, back in about the mid-2000s, we had provisions that said that agricultural science classes could meet part of the graduation requirements, and there's been different reasons as to why those things have not always ended up to be administered in quite the fashion that we thought they were coming forth from the legislature. I have with me Tom Apple, who is an instructor in Mountain Lake, that if it would be okay, Representative Stump or Senator Stump, we started out together as representatives. So, Senator Stump, I would like to have a little discussion to this point, and then we did discuss with your staff a potential amendment that could aid us in this situation.
Mr. Apple?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak with you this afternoon for a few minutes. My name is Tom Apple. I'm an agriculture educator at Mountain Lake Public School. I'm in my 31st year. I have taught agriculture there over that period of time. I'm licensed to teach agricultural education and life sciences. I've taught a number of science courses over the years also, from general science to biology to 7th and 8th grade science, etc. I'm here kind of for two reasons. One is I'm a past president of our Minnesota Association of Ag Educators, and when we started adding science requirements approximately 8 to 10 years ago, I was involved in a lot of the original sort of language that transpired at that time and as it evolved. So I'm kind of the one that's sort of kind of watched it as it has gone through the legislature. Just a quick history here, perhaps for some of the senators that are not aware of it. Prior to our graduation requirements saying that we have to have X number of courses of social, X number of courses of science, etc., you may recall we had the graduation requirements, we had the profiles of learning. That, of course, went by the wayside for various reasons, and we got rid of that. And then what happened, probably, and I don't know the exact dates, 2001, 2003, we came out and said you have to have so many courses and in the disciplines. One of the ones that we paid attention to, because agriculture is a science-based course, was the science requirements. And initially we came out, the legislation read that you would have to have 3 science classes, and that was the original legislation. We looked at it as a profession and said agriculture is very heavily based on science, both chemistry, physics, and especially biology. So it was like, okay, what can we do to help complement that and to embed standards? We started developing a number of science-based courses at that time. A survey from the Department of Education this past year, we have approximately 100 schools right now that actually embed science courses into their agri-science classes, and students go ahead and receive science course for those classes is what's happened. As time went on, we amended that, and we made sure that we included the word biology course in there. Prior to that time, students would take biology or perhaps a general science class at maybe the sophomore level. So we added the biology requirement. That still wasn't that big of a problem because, yes, they can take biology. That still leaves some more time in a student's day to access other science classes. Then, of course, what happened is we became more specific and said we got to make sure that they have a physics or a chemistry course. Here's where the problem starts to come in from a CTE standpoint. And if you look at an average student's day of perhaps 7 hours, and as we keep adding course requirements to a student's day, there becomes less of an opportunity for students to access not only agriculture education courses, but career and technical education courses across the gamut. So it becomes a little bit of a problem there. We have tried to develop and embed science. We always have in CTE. There's a number of things that we have done. We've got a number of programs that offer the College and the Schools program through the University of Minnesota. Those students enrolled in those programs go ahead and receive college credit, entrance science requirement at the University of Minnesota. However, they're not being allowed to count for science courses in our schools as we count credits. We've done a CASE program. The National Council on Agriculture Education has developed the CASE program. It's a curriculum for agricultural science education. If you have some time, just capital letters CASE, go online and take a look at it. We've had a number of instructors that have participated in the Mayo experience through Rochester. We've done an awful lot of those sort of things over the years. The bottom line is, because credits continue to be added for students, we have gotten to the point where there's not time in the day for students to access career and technical education courses. And it's starting to get to the point where the students don't have the opportunities. In the end, some of you may look at this and say, well, this is all about make sure we have these courses. The real concern here is it's opportunities for students, it's opportunities to get access to career and technical education courses. We have a lot of students out in our schools. Their ability levels are from the very top down to the very struggling kind of things. We've got a full range. We need to make sure that we have courses and allow students to access all those type of courses. So that's kind of where we're at. I believe Dr. Jim Snowden appeared before this committee last year and talked about the importance of CTE in education. He's done some extensive research and kind of proven that. So in the end here, we're kind of looking for two things. We're looking to somewhat make the graduation requirements concerning physics and chemistry perhaps less restrictive, in other words, giving opportunities for career and technical education courses to meet the benchmarks if they embed those in their classes. We have concern that a lot of schools are looking at this and it's becoming more of a seat time type curriculum. I mean, realize now you have courses and you have benchmarks, and there's a matter of only so many hours in the day. The second thing that we'd like to have you consider, and we've been having some issues with this, is even under the statute that came out of the special session last year, which indicates physics, chemistry, if they meet the underlying standards, there's been a number of licensure questions that we don't seem to be able to get clarification on from the Department of Education. We're going on 7 months now of not being able to say it says in statute that we can do this, that CTE courses can meet those requirements, but we are nowhere with that. So we're kind of looking to figure out who's going to make that interpretation for us.
Thank you.
And in closing, I'll take my advice that my wife left me with this morning is keep it short and to the point. So with that in mind, I appreciate it, and I'm very open for questions and discussion.
Great. I think before we go beyond that, Senator Stumpf moves Senate File 451 and then also moves to amend it with the A2 amendment.
Correct.
Is there any discussion? The amendment has been handed out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify. I understand there might be another amendment coming, but I think we need to clarify. At least my intent would be that we do not remove the fact that career and tech, while it is incredibly important, and I'm an avid supporter of career and technical education, that we not remove the requirement that the career and technical education course still meet the underlying standards of physics and chemistry. So I want to clarify if that's your intent.
Well, Senator Nelson, it's not entirely the intent, and I think hopefully it'll become clearer as the explanation goes, but there is a clarifying that's in another amendment that's being prepared.
Okay.
So.
And if I could just, I'll hold on to that and just follow up, maybe, Madam Chair. Can you talk to me about line 1.20 on the A2 amendment? And if I understand correctly, this amendment says that there does not need to be a satisfactory completion of an Algebra 2 credit Or it could be a district-approved course. So is there a problem with making sure all kids have Algebra 2?
Senator Stumpf, here's your chance. Go
yes.
for it.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson and members, in meeting with a lot of superintendents across the state and the commissioner and the department and a number of colleagues, one of the issues that that has come up is the flexibility as was just mentioned by Mr. Apple, how do we address flexibility for students, in their graduation standards? Do we require all students to have Algebra 2? Many of the small rural school districts are like one section schools. If we do require all schools to have, or all students to graduate or to get their high school diploma only after they pass the Algebra 2 test, the feeling amongst many of the superintendents, at least most of the superintendents that I've talked to, is that what that will force them to do is to either teach to the middle. In other words, many of the students that are high-end students are not going to have the opportunity to have a high-end course of Algebra 2. Many of the other students who do not want Algebra 2 and may not need Algebra 2 for a career path that they want to go into either have a choice of not getting their high school diploma or not getting the opportunities that they would like to get, such as the programs that include other kinds of math and science. And so the dilemma is, how do we solve this kind of a puzzle that we have gotten ourselves into? And we've gotten ourselves into by defining exact courses that have to be passed before students can graduate. And one superintendent this morning said that there's a student that has taken that test 14 times and has not passed. Now, I think what we ought to do is even though it's not going to be enforced in the sense of until 2014, I think unless we start finding and working on this issue, we probably aren't going to find a satisfactory solution. So lines 1.20 is the language to generate that discussion, to try to find a solution.
So, Senator Stumpf, you're not taking away the 4 years of math requirement, but just not allowing some flexibility and aiming it at that particular point. We do need to. This is the amendment that puts the bill in that form, even though this is the second time around. Are there any further discussion? Otherwise, let's vote on this amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye to the A2 amendment to this bill.
Aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, might I add one thing to that discussion? Thank you. Senator Stumpf, I'll just mention that digital learning is a wonderful way to provide that flexibility for small school districts to provide a variety of programs to less than a full section of students.
Thank you.
Senator Stumpf?
Madam Chair, we also have Ms. Wagner, if that's pronounced correctly. Okay. And if you give your position.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Inger Wagoner,
and I am employed as a secondary career and technical education program specialist at Lakes Country Service Cooperative in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. In that role, I serve 29 school districts over a 7-county area in their development, operation, and improvement of high school-level career and technical education programs. Through my work, I have come to proudly hold the current position of president of the Minnesota Association for Career and Technical Education, otherwise known as MNACTE. MNACTE is designed to serve all school districts throughout the state of Minnesota and their high school level and their post-secondary level as well, career and technical education programs from agriculture, manufacturing, technology, engineering, health sciences, family and consumer sciences, information technology, business, marketing, entrepreneurship, and human services such as law enforcement and fire protection. It is from both of these roles that I appear before you now. I can most assuredly testify that the entire secondary career and technical education community is deeply grateful for the work accomplished by the legislature in the 2011 session on the Omnibus E through 12 Education Act, Chapter 11. We thank you, Senator Jen Olson, Senator Leroy Stumpf, and your colleague, Representative Pat Garofalo, for your leadership in advancing career and technical education in the state of Minnesota through the work of your committees and your resulting legislation. However, we also recognize that the unique circumstances of the 2011 legislative session have resulted in some pieces of the Omnibus E through 12 Education Act that are in need of correction and revision. I and my MNACTE colleagues offer ourselves to be present at and to participate in the discussions and conversations with you regarding possible corrections and revisions to the issues that impact secondary career and technical education. My wish is to speak with you today regarding Minnesota 2011 Statute 120B.023, Subdivision 2, Paragraph D, titled Revisions and Reviews Required. Specifically, I am referring to the sentence that reads, under the revised science standards, students scheduled to graduate in 2014 to 2015 school year or later must satisfactorily complete a chemistry, physics, or career and technical education credit that meets the standards underlying either the chemistry or physics credit. To so clearly and directly articulate that students, in order to graduate, must complete among more traditional options of chemistry and physics, that now includes an option for career and technical education that meets the standards underlying either the chemistry or physics credit, is an accomplishment which provides for enormous benefits to the most important stakeholders in education. For students, it expands the availability of a diverse range of educational environments and methods that now include career and technical education to meet their unique learning needs of all students so they can experience success in school, be engaged in coursework and learning, and to achieve graduation. For business and industry, it provides secondary school educational experiences which are, through career and technical education, applied, contextual, and authentic learning opportunities that go beyond the development of science knowledge to connecting that knowledge to science application in careers and industries that are essential to our local, state, national, and global economies. And for school districts, it offers new options and improved flexibility to provide their students access to and success in an increasing number of statewide academic standards. Over the past 7 months since the closing of the 2011 special session, those of us in the career and technical education field have found that key understandings to allow for full implementation of the statute, however, has not yet been accomplished. There are actions, and in some cases, lack of action, that apparently have prevented the Minnesota Department of Education to determine and communicate the intent of this portion of Minnesota statutes, as has been requested by the career and technical educators in the state. Therefore, MNACDI respectfully requests that a clarification be made that it is the intent of the legislature to allow career and technical education credits that meet the underlying the standards underlying either the chemistry or physics credit to be recognized as meeting one of the three science credits required for graduation. In closing, I would like to thank you for your time this afternoon, and should you have any questions, I am both available and happy to answer them. Thank you.
There is an amendment that is addressing this area that is being created, but there was a technical change needed, so it's taken a little bit more time to do that. Are there any questions of members of the testifiers?
Madam Chair, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said as far as the intent of the legislation. But that maybe we'll see that in the amendment as it's coming out. But how does that address the Algebra 2 credit question on line 1.20?
Senator Nelson, let me have a whack at this, because Senator Stump has brainwashed me into realizing that we need some greater flexibility in this math. The 4 years of math, and I'm kidding.
I took all the math I could take
in high school and did very well. I was the only female that did, and then ended up getting the top math award, which was kind of in your face. But it was it surprised even me. But I'm not trying to denigrate the value of mathematics and these courses. But I still see in our career and tech areas that not only the use of math and at different levels. I remember hearing Temple Grandin say, I needed geometry first. I needed that more than I needed algebra. That we have not provided, we have stipulated rather rigid standards in compartmentalization. And what we're trying to do and what Senator Stump is trying to do is open that up. And that's where, if you had a technical math course that encompassed all of it, and that might be the best suited in preparation for young people that were pursuing a career tech area in higher education, than it would be the magical having on a transcript that you had this course and that course. The other thing I want to say, and we'll be discussing that more next week in another of the options, is that the digital learning, I think, is going to be an important part and can be an important part when somebody takes something that has got pieces of this and is a course that serves that need. If there are more things that need to be learned, you don't need to go and take another whole course to get it. That you can get some of those standards or benchmarks through a digital process that is much more flexible and accommodating than the traditional way that we have worked. And that's accessible. Those kinds of things are accessible to schools of all sizes and locations. So I agree wholeheartedly with Senator Stump in trying to introduce that flexibility for school districts that want to use that. How's that other?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Bonhoff, otherwise we can go on and just relate to what other corrections we are trying to make in this bill, because you notice my name is on it too, that we're trying to make relative to the funding aspect of it, and that is being addressed in the remainder of the bill.
Senator. Madam Chair, I just want to take the occasion, since we were stalling, to speak in support of the bill. I think it's really important that we introduce this flexibility as someone who couldn't have passed Algebra 2 if I took it 20 times. And yet I could, soar through accounting and actually could do statistics. So, I mean, there are differences. And I have a constituent who, when we were dealing with this issue, who attended Wayzata, and her daughter kept taking it and taking it and taking it and somehow got that exception to graduate, and is now an A student at the University of Montana. So I think Understanding the importance of math and the discipline of math is important, but I think also the flexibility that each person is unique is important as well. So thank you, Senator Stump, for bringing it forward.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. The amendment has arrived, so we'll get this tended to. Senator Regan.
Yes, Madam Chair, I had a question whether the department had a position on this regarding the district-approved course. And as they approach, one point is that this applies, of course, not only to career tech but to all students, and there should not be any false sense of security that you are necessarily college or career ready by completing this, because you're still going to be taking the Accuplacer or the ACT or something to see if you're going to need remediation in math. So while it might get you through the high school, we still have the college career ready goal in the state as a part of our accountability plan with the post-secondary expectations as measured in the Accuplacer, ACT, or whatever they use. But I'd be curious what the department has to say.
Madam Chair, could I get a copy of the amendment?
Pardon me?
Could I get a copy of the amendment, please?
Okay. The author.
Madam Chair and Senator Uyghur, I think the intent here is to get a discussion started. After visiting with dozens and dozens of superintendents from across the state, and with such a unanimous agreement that this is a challenge for us, for the legislature, I wanted to try to get that discussion going. And I personally feel that the solution to some of these problems are not going to come out of the K-12 system, because I think they're anchored in both higher ed as well as K-12. And I think we need that solution to come out of kind of mutually out of both the higher ed and the K-12 system. So it's going to be a challenge, because if we change the current statute and it looks like we're lowering the standard, that's a problem, because the business community and a lot of others are going to say, well, you're lowering the standard. That's not what we need. So we have to find a solution that will be acceptable on a lot of fronts. But at the same time, I think we need to keep in mind that the solution needs to be found for the interest of the students, so that students have the opportunities they want and need and can go on and fulfill their careers. So I think that's kind of where I'm coming from on that language.
And I think we've got to be careful that we aren't we're trying to do some things that keep flexibility both for the decisions and the of students and not tracking. You know, that's not the intent of this. And even if you're choosing to go into a career in technical area, one option may be more essential and valuable than the other. If you're pursuing a career that's heavily mathematical oriented, why would you take anything that would be different than the kind of a requirement that you've looked into for the area that you're pursuing? And I think that's what we're trying to bring, some of that flexibility back, because we're losing a lot of students and we're handicapping some of them. We do need to keep the attention on the preparation in these fundamentals, because I remember sitting next to at a function here in St. Paul with someone that was teaching the remedial math at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and he said, actually, it was arithmetic. Well, isn't that something? If we're having to teach remedial arithmetic in order to be able to go on into a college-level work. So we do have more work to do here, but part of it is being able to make some modifications that address different learning needs that these students have. Did you have a chance to engross the amendment?
Yes, I have, and it's the A3 amendment. And what it does is it allows on the bottom of page 1, delete the or, and then on the page 2, the significant language is basically inserting delete credit and insert biology or combination thereof.
Is this distributed? Oh, here it is.
So it says the technical education which meets the standard underlying either chemistry, physics, biology, or a combination thereof. Yeah. In other words, you could have a kind of a composite course or a combination of things, there's several career tech fields that will address science, but the agriculture one is one in particular, and it may not be all crammed into one place in one time, but they're learning these things in an applied way, and they meet these standards, and they ought to be given credit for it.
Correct.
Any questions about your offering the amendment?
I would move that amendment.
Okay, Senator Stump moves the A3 amendment. Any further discussion?
Well, Madam Chair,
again,
I just renew my interest in the department's position.
Okay, sorry. McHenry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Kevin McHenry with the Department of Education. I also have with me John Olson if we wanted to get into a little bit more discussion on this A3 amendment. But to the question before that was raised by Senator Wieger regarding a district-approved course, I think from the department's perspective, this has been a great conversation. Appreciate you all having this conversation. It's something that we have struggled with. Obviously, we are very interested in providing paths to college and career ready. The definition of what that is can be different for different students. They can go down different paths. So I know that this is something that we do struggle with. I think we might like to have a further discussion on what exactly a district-approved course, what that may or may not mean. I don't think we want to have any unintended consequences for making some changes to get away from the Algebra 2 credit and the math credit, but we understand what the issue is as far as making some changes so they can be more compatible with career and tech, and we're definitely interested in continuing working on that. Further, and I'm going to apologize on the other part of the amendment, we're looking at the career and tech levy. I'm going to apologize.
We're not going to be able to act on that because of not having targets on it. So okay. My intention is to lay this on the table and so that we can revisit this. But we've gotten this open for discussion. There can continue to be discussion. So thank you for that input, but we won't grapple with the levy issue right now.
Okay, and Madam Chair, I appreciate that. We actually had discussed this before and was told this wasn't going to be brought up, so I didn't bring in Dr. Melcher to kind of walk through that with the committee because I know he can be really helpful in that portion. But as far as getting more towards A3, I might open this up and have Mr. Olson come up to discuss that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Olson. I am the science specialist for the Department of Education. I guess I was asked to lay a little background in terms of standards and how it might relate to courses and things like that. In Minnesota, we develop standards based upon what is kind of research-based understanding of what students need to be scientific literate when they get out of high school and go on into college. And that's the basis on which standards are based. In particular, we have four strands: physical science, which incorporates chemistry and physics, introductory level stuff, life science, and earth science. It was a decision of the legislature to base the MCA exam on the life science standards. So one concern would be, will the courses that are used to count for the biology credit with integrity meet those standards and prepare students sufficiently for the MCA exam? That's one kind of thing to keep in mind. And then, you know, with other things as well, will the students learn the standards in the way that gives them the equivalent of chemistry or physics instruction? This year, with the addition of chemistry and physics as a potential chemistry or physics as a credit requirement, we added a special section in the standards that were written in 2009 to address the needs of people who would take a course to meet those standards. Traditionally, students take either a lower level chemistry or physics course or a course that is traditionally called a college prep course and usually involves a little more higher math than most students use. Since this time around, we wanted to create a requirement that all students could access. The standards are written at sort of a more intermediate level so that we feel that with the normal math requirement, they should be able to handle that course and do well on that. That's sort of an overview. I don't know if I'm hitting specifically the question you're interested in.
Thank you. We're going to lay this over. Thank you for putting that on the table, that we have that knowledge. We'll lay Senate File 451 on the table for further consideration. It will be back.
Thank you. Madam Chair, did we adopt the amendment,
the A3?
I don't believe. Did we?
We did not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then need a motion to take it off the table.
I would move to take it. Remove
Sorry.
It from the table.
All right. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Now,
I move the A3 amendment.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, so the amendment is adopted. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very
and now
much,
I will
Madam
lay it
Chair.
On the table. Thank you very much, Senator Stump, for catching me on that.
So what we're doing? We're in tech.
Oh, that's what
we just did. Oh yeah, I did see that. Is it all month? So we're almost done. That's right, you're right. Let's get a red pencil out and send it back to him for correction.
Senator Olson, welcome to the testifying table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm bringing Senate File 1531 before you today. I think it is, there's a few folks that have probably discovered that it is this proposal, and I do believe we have, we will have an author's amendment. I'm not sure if I have it yet, or if it was in my packet and I didn't get it with me. But
Senator Olson, is that the A3 amendment?
Probably. I haven't seen it in its final form. Yes.
The A3 amendment's in the packets.
Okay. So I would like to offer that as, I would like to move Senate File 1531 and the author's amendment of A3.
Okay. All those in favor of adopting the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Motion carries.
No, you didn't ask for opposed.
Oh, excuse me. Is there anyone opposed to putting this bill in the shape the author prefers? Okay. All those opposed, same sign. No. Motion carries. Senator Olson, please continue with Senate File 1531.
Thank you very much. This bill is another one that is focused on opening some doors for career tech opportunities. particularly in areas that may not have been able to hang on to or retain some of the programs within their high school. But by the same time, it's not replacing that, but just giving another option. And that we've got a number of testifiers, and I would rather than doing a lot of talking and going, you can glance through it, I would like to have Joe Nathan, who has joined me at the table here, explain a little bit of his, because he has been a strong proponent of this, and we've got some quite a few testifiers that would like to attest to why this might be a very worthy addition in policy on our part.
Dr. Nathan, could you introduce yourself for the tape, please?
Madam Chair, my name is Joe Nathan. I direct the Center for School Change at McAllister College. I've been a public school teacher and administrator, PTA parent, and otherwise actively involved in trying to improve public education in Minnesota since 1970. And I am speaking on behalf of myself today, not McAllister College or any other institution.
Mr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, 25 years ago in this building, the Minnesota legislature made history. It was a bipartisan effort sponsored by a Democratic governor, strongly encouraged by a Republican governor. Governor Quay was the Republican. Governor Perpich was the Democrat. They had been in a very difficult debate, and one defeated the other. But nevertheless, they decided to work together on this a quarter century ago. Connie Leve, a Republican, worked very closely with Tom Nelson. Senator Stumpf remembers those days. This received national attention when Minnesota decided to allow 11th and 12th graders on a careful and thoughtful basis to try college and university courses. At the University of Minnesota, where I was at the time, the decision was to allow each youngster to take one course and to see how she or he did, and then to proceed. And for several years, high school students at the University of Minnesota, and that continues to this day, high school students at the University of Minnesota and many other institutions have earned a higher grade point average than the freshman class. What you're going to do today is to hear from a variety of people, from Chris Stewart with the African American Leadership Forum, to Tina Armstrong, the president of the Minnesota Council of Gifted and Talented, to Dane Smith from Growth and Justice, from Minnesota Business Partnership, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Steve Allen, Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, several parents, and Von Dow, a refugee to this country who is a first-generation high school and college graduate. We're all going to talk about four basic things. First, why is it valuable to allow high school students to take college courses? Well, this ought to be an option. We have developed a variety of options in this state: advanced placement, international baccalaureate, college in the schools. Our organization has distributed thousands of these documents that describe from the high school perspective why it's valuable for youngsters to take advanced placement, international baccalaureate, college in the schools. These are all courses taken in the high school, or to have a chance to actually take a course on the college campus. What do we know? We know that youngsters who participate in these courses are far more likely not only to enter but to graduate from some form of higher education. At St. Scholastica, for example, a careful study was done that found that the youngsters entering who had taken post-secondary option courses did not have a higher college entrance test, did not have a higher college entrance score than the other students, but they graduated 25%. They were 25% more likely to actually graduate from St. Scholastica. There's something in the academic literature now called academic momentum. It turns out that youngsters who take these kinds of challenging classes are far more likely to not only enter but graduate from some form of higher education. So we know it's valuable to do that, to participate in some challenging classes while you're in high school. We know, secondly, that even though there was vigorous debate, and in fact one organization in Minnesota said that it was, quote, the worst piece of legislation passed in a quarter century when it was passed in 1985, more than 110,000 youngsters have taken college courses on college campuses, that when the Minnesota secondary principals, who were not sure they liked this idea, to put it gently, in 1985, when they were surveyed by the legislative auditor, more than half of those who responded said one of the impacts of post-secondary options was that it increased communication between high school and colleges, and indeed it has helped lead to a significant increase in the number of advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and college in the schools programs. And we think that that's great. This ought to be an option. Third thing that we know is youngsters and their families have said overwhelmingly in survey after survey that if they had to do it over, they would do it again. More than 90% say that. So what is this particular proposal? The particular proposal, and this is available if one of the pages could share this, please. But this proposal builds on 20 years of research. It says that participation in dual credit courses offers important benefits. It also says, and this will be coming around to you in just a moment, that we have recent research showing that youngsters who have not done particularly well in high school are among the most, receive among the most benefit of taking these classes. There's a major piece of research done by the University of Minnesota involving thousands of students that says the dual enrollment may well be a strategy for encouraging post-secondary success among students not typically seen as college-bound. Contrary to the arguments of some critics of expanding dual enrollment, this can benefit a range of students, not only those most beneficial to students who often are excluded from participation. So, finally, what does this bill do? It does five things. First, it eliminates a double standard. Right now, high schools, quite rightly, can tell kids and families that if they take advanced placement, international baccalaureate, or college in the schools, they can, if they do well, they can save themselves literally thousands of dollars. Because if they earn college credits while they're still in high school, they can literally save thousands of dollars. Well, right now, the law is silent about high schools, so high schools do that. The law explicitly prohibits colleges from doing that. We think that's a double standard. We think that colleges explicitly ought to be allowed to tell families the truth. That's the first thing. The secondly, and it eliminates another double standard. It says that post-secondary option students can do what advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and concurrent enrollment or college in the school students can do, which is that they can earn both high school and college credits. That's what the other programs allow, whereas there's a little sleeper poison pill in the current legislation that says you have to choose one or the other. We think we ought to have truth in advertising. We think we ought to have equal access to these kinds of credits if the students do well. They don't automatically get the credit. Third, it removes a barrier that was placed on this bill in 1986. It allows students in the metropolitan area to attend either intermediate units or post-secondary institutions for dual credit in the career technical field. Fourth, it allows 9th and 10th graders to take one PSEO career tech course to start, as we did in 1986 at the University of Minnesota, allows them to take one. And if they do not earn at least a C, they may not take any more until they are otherwise eligible. In other words, there's a huge incentive to do well. It allows them to take one. And if they earn a C, they can take additional courses. And colleges, of course, retain the right to determine which courses students can take. Finally, it allows students who are in the 11th grade who are not in the top one-third of their class and 12th graders who are not in the top half of their class to take one class. If they earn a C, they may take additional classes. We have had, over the last 15 years, various attempts to put more and more restrictions on this. This particular restriction was not in the original legislation. It's not actually in the law today. It was a policy decision that was made. We believe, and we think that you will hear testimony from parents and others who point out, just as some of you have pointed out, that people are different, that sometimes the most brightest and most talented and most motivated young people are people who don't necessarily end up in the top third or top half of their class.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Just a reminder to the committee and to our testifiers that we must adjourn at 4:30 today. And it sounds like we have a lot of excellent testimony, so I hope we get to that. Senator Olson, who is your next testifier? Mr. Wadle.
We will continue this in a future time if we don't complete all the testimony, and certainly it's a lot to discuss as well. So
thank you. Mr. Wadle.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Bob Wadle. I've been around education for quite a few years, although today I don't represent any particular organization, although I work with many. I'm here speaking on my own behalf. So thank you, members, for the ongoing work that you do for Minnesota's children. And Senator Olson, I'm not sure how many times I'll be testifying, but I heard a rumor that this you might not be hanging around here after the session. But so I want to.
It's a fact.
It's a fact. It's no longer a rumor. Okay. Well, I'm here in support of this bill, and I did provide a written copy of my testimony. So, Madam Chair, I will be brief. Four things that I think are important to this bill. One is it really drives home the importance of individualization of our learning programs for our children. While there's change going around the world at a geometric rate, one of the things that's driving that change is individualization. And, of course, the digital platform is driving a lot of that, but there are other spinoffs as well. And this bill is one of those spinoffs. It permits, for example, 9th and 10th graders to, in addition to accessing the opportunities that Dr. Nathan indicated, but also it permits them then to access college-level courses through post-secondary enrollment options. Many people will say, yeah, but 9th and 10th graders, how many of those will be able to profit? And I would suggest not many, but we're talking about individualization. So if there's just a handful in the era of individualization, why should they not have that option if they can indeed benefit from that? And it's interesting, in the St. Paul Pioneer Press a few years ago, they had a story about a student who enrolled at North Hennepin Community Technical College when he was in middle school. And he didn't enroll in Phi Ed. He enrolled in rigorous math and chemistry classes and got straight A's. He was a BREC student, then went on while he was at 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade at BREC, took classes at North Hennepin, took classes at the University of Minnesota, and at BREC, and did extremely well. Of course, he had to pay for those classes. So the point is, there are students who can really benefit, but maybe there are students whose families can't afford to pay that can benefit as well. So one thing that's important in this era of individualization is that we open the door to students who, on their own individual basis, chosen by their families and them, rather than government regulations, they choose, they decide whether or not they can benefit from this new opportunity. Second is we have to guard against narrow entrance criteria. I think all we have to do is go back and look at the PSEO bill that Senator Olson voted for in the mid-80s. We did a study, I was at the department, that we did a study after the first year, and we found that the students in PSEO had higher GPAs than did college freshmen. But the shocking thing was that 5% of those students were high school dropouts. Now, I ask you this question. Do you think if there would have been entrance criteria set up, that high school dropout would have been one of those? None of those students would have been able to access PSEO had we had those kinds of entrance criteria. So here we have, rather than dropouts, we have college students. We haven't followed those students up. But think of the world, how this has changed their world. Rather than being a dropout, they're perhaps being a college graduate. So be wary of strict entrance criteria. Let's let parents and families make those kinds of decisions. Third is the dual enrollment in both secondary and post-secondary. I have to believe that the way the PSEO law is written today, you would be shocked if you really knew what that law said. And the good news is, I don't think very many people really follow it. Right now, students can only take college classes for college credit or high school credit. If you take it for high school credit, it's paid for. But if you decide to take it for college credit, you have to pay for it. Well, of course, nobody takes it for college credit. But if you took it for college credit, you had to pay for it. But then if you pass the course and brought your transcript back to the high school, then the high school will give you credit. So if you have the money to pay for the college tuition, then you get dual high school and college credit. But if you don't have the money, then you can only get high school credit for the college course. Then, when you graduate from high school and you go to the college, one of the colleges that you attended, then you can petition the college to give you the college credit. But what if you took credit at Hennepin County, or Hennepin Technical and Metro State, you, under the current law, you can't get both of those credits given to you, because you can only get the credit at the college that you attend. What if you go out of state? You don't get any college credit for those classes that you pass at all. This is current law. I don't think that's how it is really functioning, and that's the good news. But I really believe that you really do want to change that. Fourth, is, and this is very important, is the high school and post-secondary partnership piece. And I think it speaks very, very well also to the bill that Senator Stump just reviewed with you. There is a significant overlap between grades, especially grades 11, 12, 13, and 14, and that's very expensive. It's expensive for the state to pay for calculus classes twice. It's expensive for students to have to take classes that they may already have taken in high school. But so we need to merge our high school colleges. And when I was commissioner, Chancellor Maury Anderson and I worked to try to get middle college programs in Minnesota. We weren't very successful at that. But the Anoka District and the Anoka Technical College started the STEP program, and you may be familiar with that, functioning extremely well. Kids are graduating from the STEP program well on their way to a post-secondary degree at huge savings to the state and huge savings to families. A new charter school was approved in Staples called Connections Academy, along with the Lakes Area community technical colleges, where when the students leave that high school, they will have their 1 year skill certificate finished, or well on their way to completing that, well on their way to a degree. So as this bill provides the encouragement for partnerships, I strongly support that, because that really takes us a long way down the road toward the meshing of the institution. So, Madam Chair, I urge your support for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Wadle.
Madam Chair, I just wanted Senator to Olson. Say that in your packets is the copy of the article of the student that he referred to that actually got his 2-year degree from North Hennepin Community College at age 13.
The youngest ever.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
But there's more kinds of giftedness, too, and we're going to hear from folks about that.
Chris Stewart and Tina Armstrong, if you could both come to the table, please.
This is Elaine.
All right. Chris, if you could introduce yourself for the committee, please, and the tape.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Stewart. I'm the co-chair with the African American Leadership Forum's Education Work Group. The African American Leadership Forum is 650 members strong. We have 50 members on our Education Work Group. We represent all sectors of professional employment. I'm here today to talk a little bit, first of all, to thank the authors of Senate File 1531, specifically to thank them for thinking of expanding post-secondary options and reducing the gap between high school and college. The African American Leadership Forum is often concerned with finding innovative ways for us to close achievement gaps, but other gaps also. One of the gaps that we think that this actually addresses is the gap between high school and college. So many of our efforts, especially in the urban core, are directed right now at making all children college and career ready. You will hear that through K-12 throughout much of the plans, strategic plans for the urban school districts, and many things where we actually put our investment into right now are all geared towards getting every child to the point where when they graduate from high school, they can do something. And hopefully one of those some things that they can do is actually participate successfully within college. One of the things that we think is really important is opening up opportunity and access as early as we possibly can open it for students. I think what this bill actually does well is that it gets it down to the ninth grade level. I can just tell you a story from Minneapolis. I was a former school board member in Minneapolis, and when I was on the board, we decided that we were going to drop all entrance criteria into our IB classes and our AP classes in two of our more Tony high schools, and actually this actually caused a lot of concern. Actually, I was one of the people on the side of the fence that was absolutely against it, and so I just want to say that for the record. I was one of the people that argued that everything was going to break loose and that with the standards were going to go, through the floor, and we were going to have a real problem. The short story is that we didn't. short story is that what we had was we had a lot of students who previously we wouldn't have been able to identify as being able to participate in this opportunity did so, and they did so well, and they continue to do so well now. I see this as a new opportunity to do the same thing, but at the college level. High school and college is really so distant from each other, especially in the minds of high school students, that if you give them early access and early opportunities to experience it, it demystifies the process for them. I can tell you, as my as a working class father who somehow ended up with middle class kids, and I don't know how that happened. One of the things is when it came to college time, having been a working class father, I actually was myself mystified by the process. But one of the things that I did well was actually in the ninth grade, I got my son the opportunity to go to a high school that was on a college campus. For me, it was my strategy to front-loading him and demystifying for him what I couldn't possibly explain for him. I think this bill actually goes a long way to doing the same thing. The thing I will say about opportunity and access, and where I think this bill does a good job, is at the very time where everybody is attempting to open access for the kids and get them more opportunity and open more doors, we see a closing of the door with national trends. We see between 1976 and 2009, we see a change between most of the loans, federal loans, being less about needs-based and being more about merit and scholarship-based. I don't think that there's a real problem with that, except for those trends redouble themselves over and over again, and you eventually get a predictable product, which is that our taxpayer-funded public colleges actually serve a more and more elite group of people. I don't really think that that this bill solves that completely, but I think what it does is it works at the other end to open the doors and make the doors wider so that more people actually get through. So I respectfully ask you guys to support this. I appreciate your time today, and I thank you for considering this bill that I think opens the door for far more students.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Ms. Salinas, and then if there are testifiers on the list who cannot come back tomorrow, I would like you to follow Ms. Salinas. I'm just so afraid we're going to run out of time today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Elaine Salinas. I am president of a nonprofit organization in Minneapolis called Migazy Communications. We've been around for 35 years, and we provide media training and educational support to American Indian students in Minneapolis schools. And we focus on middle school and secondary students. I remember being here in 1985 and testifying in support of PSEO at that point in time. Wow. And the reason that I did so was because I thought it was very, very important that we open the doors of college to more low-income students and give them an opportunity to earn some college credits while still in high school. I also know, and I have experienced in all of my years of education, that we need to have different kinds of learning environments, different kinds of educational opportunities for different kinds of students. And I think that's a theme in the testimony you've heard so far today. So we supported PSEO and have been a strong supporter of it over the years. But if you look at statewide data, even if you look at data for Minneapolis, American Indians are the group that takes least advantage of these opportunities, whether it's PSEO, CIS, College in the Schools, International Baccalaureate, the various dual credit options. American Indians have the lowest participation rates. And the number one reason for that is that they don't qualify for most of these programs. You'll also notice, if you look at data for Minneapolis, that American Indian students have the highest dropout rates and lowest graduation rates of any racial ethnic group. Our students are suffering. And if we can create opportunities for them that don't exist for them today to help them reengage in education, that's critical for our students. And I want to just share a story today. I was hoping to actually bring a student with me, but I want to tell you the story of Andrew. Andrew is a young Indian man. He's an 11th grader in one of the alternative schools that contract with Minneapolis. It's a school for Indian students. Andrew is very bright. He's been in six different schools in Minneapolis. And his grades would never, if you look at his grades, you would never know what a bright student he is. He's a failing student on paper. And so for the last 2 years that we've been working with Andrew, we've been trying to re-engage him in education, trying to figure out what is it that makes this young man tick? What is he interested in? And we finally found something. This year we got him engaged. We do science fair activities. And none of us knew anything about whether he was interested, whether he was curious, but we said, we've tried a lot of things, let's try this thing. And so he got engaged in science fair. And Andrew is right now preparing to go to regional science fair. His science fair project is a solar-powered cooler. And it's amazing how this project and being part of the science fair activity has ignited his passion. He's passionate about anything mechanical, and he is very, very gifted. Now, just using that by way of example, we like to win science fairs. So if we had, when we had invited students to participate in our science fair activities, if we had said, but only if you got good grades. Only the students with good grades are going to be allowed to participate. We would have never discovered, nor probably would Andrew have discovered, his talent and passion for science. Andrew's question is now, can I take some college courses? He's fired up on science. Andrew isn't going to be able to take college courses under the current regulations because he won't meet the eligibility criteria. He's not in the top third of his class, and I doubt whether he could pass the ACCUPLACER. But do I believe he could take a college-level science course and succeed? I do. And the reason I believe that is because we have found something that he cares desperately about, that he is passionate about, and that's driving him right now. And I think we've talked about how important it is for kids to have the connection to college, to encourage them, to give them that experience when maybe nobody else in their family has had it. But the other part of PSEO and dual credit that I think is really important is I think it can help kids like Andrew, who without intervention could have easily been a high school dropout. I think it's a hook to keep them engaged in their own education, to get them to graduate from high school. So we're very supportive of this legislation. For every, you know, there's hundreds of and probably thousands of Andrews out there. A lot of Indian kids are like Andrew because there's such a mismatch between the way they learn, their preferred learning style, and the way classes and schools are set up. So there's a lot of Andrews out there, and these kids need open windows. They need to find open windows, not closed doors. And so I would urge you to support this legislation, particularly, legislation that's going to allow an Andrew to take a class at a college and to experience that and succeed at it.
Thank you, Ms. Salinas. Just a note to the committee and our guests today. We will be we'll take one more testifier, then we'll be adjourning. We'll be putting this, we'll be laying this on the table. Ms. Armstrong.
Yeah, I'm Tina Armstrong with the Minnesota Council for Gifted and Talented. And, to what the last testifier said, one of the things that we've been really struggling with as an organization is our is the impression that gifted and talented necessarily means high achieving. And, we support those portions of this bill that really reach out to those underserved populations of gifted and talented kids, the ones that are not getting identified, that are not getting A's. Maybe they've disengaged from their program, disengaged from school. They're not getting challenged in their current environment. We've actually supported and advocated for an expansion of PSEO to 9th and 10th graders for many years. One of the with some of the amendments in that on this bill, we're disappointed to see that it is restricting the 9th and 10th graders to only the career and technical courses, because we do see an expansion of PSEO as being a valuable option for families within the gifted and talented gifted community. It's not a replacement for the wonderful things we're seeing in Minnesota schools, such as advanced placement, international baccalaureate, the college and the schools programs, or our honors or GT programs at a high school level. Those programs aren't right for every one of the students. And so this would be another option for families. And as an organization that supports our gifted and talented parents and families, it's something that we really see as a piece that's missing from the bill as it's going to stand now. We also see it as a logical progression. A couple of years ago, we expanded acceleration options and required all school districts to have acceleration procedures for gifted and talented students. So we're going to have more and more students, we hope, reach these 9th and 10th grades looking for more advanced options for them to take and being ready for college coursework at those grades. Now, I did bring a parent with me, and so I think I'm stuck at this point.
Let's please indulge and make sure we can listen to a parent. Always a feet on the ground.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you.
And what parent do we have today? Please come to the table and introduce yourself to the committee. Welcome.
We've got 5 minutes left, so.
Okay. Hi, Madam Chair. My name is Lynn Norby. I work with Tina volunteer with Tina in the Minnesota Council of Gifted and Talented as a board member. And I also have 4 children who have done the PSEO program. Two of them, one did earlier than 10th grade, earlier than 9th grade, so technically it wasn't PSEO. We had to pay for it ourselves. I'm here to speak about expanding the program, specifically the 9th and 10th grader. And as Tina said, we were looking at the portion that was college courses, not just career and technical information. I'll try to make it really quick. My daughter was clearly ready for college level courses in ninth and 10th grade. She's a senior now, and I'm proud to say she's a National Merit and Presidential Scholar candidate. So she was really ready for it in 9th and 10th grade. And some people advise we put her into college early, but we really wanted to keep her in high school, and she really wanted to stay in high school for all that high school has to offer. But the coursework didn't really meet her needs in some areas, so particularly biology is where her passion is. So we were able to pay for her to take biology at Normandale Community College, which is we're at Jefferson, so it's right there. And it was tight for us. We don't have a lot of money, but we were able to do it, and that's an option that a lot of families don't have. But she did well at it. We met some resistance from Normandale. They weren't sure that we could do that because she didn't have a diploma yet. But I'm happy to say she went on and got the highest grade in the class from the professor who didn't think high schoolers should be there. And then she was able to take an environmental biology class the next year and has just really sparked a passion. She did in her college application essays, talked about her dream of going to the Amazon and researching biochemistry stuff that was over my head to cure diseases and all this. And she has done just about everything she set out to do, so that might be a possibility. And a program like this is a way for us to make sure that those kids that are capable of stuff like that, we're doing what we can to foster that. And I think as a state, that's a resource that we don't want to squelch. You know, if they want to go on and do this when they're ready in 9th and 10th grade, it's in everybody's best interest to do it. And then the only last thing is also addressing the part about the non-typical kids, because my oldest one would fit in that mold. He was very bright. He is very bright, but has ADD, and he wasn't succeeding in the normal range of how you measure things. But we were able to get him into PSEO in 11th and 12th grade. Because we had homeschooled, we went different channels because we had to with him. We really had to work hard to get it. And doing a program like this, opening us up to 9th and 10th graders, allow it to be an option not just for those kids who have parents that can afford it and look into things and push it, but all those kids. So I see it as opening up an access. And it is a really important option. Like you said, we've got many other wonderful programs, but they don't work for everybody. And so opening up PSEO to younger ages would really help a lot of kids.
Thank you, Ms. Norby. Senator Olson.
There's another parent and one that I don't know if they can come back, but we've got about 2 minutes left. Is there anybody that wouldn't be able to come back? The ones who are representing organizations are always around here. So,
do we have any parents in the room who cannot attend tomorrow?
Sands. are on the list.
Yes. Please come to the testifying table and welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Hello, I'm Paul Menny. I'm a parent, so thank you for having me here today. It is an honor to be here. I'll try and make it quick. I only have about a half page for you. Anyway, so what I want to tell you about is my experience with PSCO. And my experience with PSCO is as a high school senior, I was not allowed to do it. So I was denied the opportunity on the basis of a percentage. I was the first student on the bottom 50% of my class. And so therefore, I couldn't participate. I was a white kid, middle-class family with a parents who advocated with the school counselor to allow me to do it. I still was not allowed to do it. And this was even independent of the fact that I tried doing this my senior year. That summer, I had just completed basic training because I had signed up for the National Guard to pay for my own college education and to serve the state that I love and the country that I live in. So even with that, I still was not allowed to participate in PSCO. You go on from there. I went on to graduate from high school, and then from there I attended the United States Intelligence Center in Arizona as an intelligence analyst. And I'm proud to say I graduated with honors there, second in the class, of which half of the people failed out. Yet, again, still was not allowed to participate in PSEO. I went on to Minnesota State University, achieved multiple Dean's Lists honors, and graduated with honors from there. And if that's not enough, I don't know what is, but it doesn't end there. From there, I went on from college, started my career, and became a vice president of a community bank by the age of 27. And so not only that, I participate in my community. I have been participating in all the Chamber of Commerces of the communities I've lived in. I've served on the school board, and currently I'm on the city council of the town I live in, solving some of the other problems that are created from maybe this room. Solving these problems, participating in the community, I was not good enough, based on a number more reflective of an institution than an individual, to participate in PSEO. And for my money and my experience, I'm most proud of the five kids that I have. And I don't want this to be changed for me. It's too late for that. But for my kids and for all the kids who just got home from taking the bus home, those kids are going to solve the problems that this room creates and that I create, and boy, I want them to have more opportunity to be better prepared to solve those than I did. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meany. I appreciate your service abroad and here, and thank you for providing such a great example about perseverance and not being deterred.
Right,
Senator Olson, I would like to move that Senate File 1531 be laid on the table so we can address it later with the rest of the wonderful witnesses you have. All in favor of putting Senate File 1531 on the table, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. A meeting is adjourned.